It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, hello, hello, welcome one and all. It is June 22nd, 2021. Yep, that's what the calendar says. And it's 1900 UTC, so thanks so much for tuning in. It's news to me time. I'll be here for 30 minutes, and then after us, or me, is the Doobie Skulls Committee with Tobe. And that'll be at 1930 UTC. Not a whole lot happening today. I went and gathered news early. I'm having to pre-record the show. I have a meeting at 1, at 2, and at 3. Well, yeah, I've got a little gap of time, so I might be able to tune into the DGC, but yeah, anyway, I'm very tired. I'm pre-recording, and you know, that's kind of just how it goes sometimes.
Resistance is futile.
Yep, that's how it goes. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. We'll start the way we almost always start.
World news.
That's right. First, in Canada. Police in Canada say they're treating fires that destroyed two Catholic churches on Indigenous community land in British Columbia as suspicious. Sacred Heart Church and St. Gregory's Church burnt down at the same time early on Monday as Canada marked National Indigenous Peoples Day. The two churches, built more than 100 years ago, are located about 40 kilometers apart in the western province. Liquid accelerants are believed to have been used, one fire official said. The two churches on the Penticton Indian Band Reserve and the Osoyoos Indian Band Reserve are less than 100 kilometers from Kamloops, where the remains of 215 children were found at a former boarding school in Maine. Thousands of Indigenous children were sent to such schools in the 19th and 20th centuries to be forcibly assimilated. The institutions were often run by the Roman Catholic Church. Police in Penticton said an officer spotted the blaze at Sacred Heart Church at around 1 o'clock local time on Monday, but that the buildings were engulfed when the officers arrived on the scene. At about 3:10 local time, police in Oliver received reports that St. Gregory's Church was also on fire. Both historic buildings burnt to the ground. We believe, by looking at the scene and the surroundings, that there was a liquid accelerant used, Bob Graham, chief of Oliver Fire Department, was quoted as saying, earlier indications that it was set. In a statement, Royal Canadian Mounted spokesman Sergeant Jason Beta said, should our investigators deem these fires as arson, the RCMP will be looking at all possible motives and allow the facts and evidence to direct our investigative action. So, we'll see how that plays out. The United States and Canada use this kind of approach to destroy, you know, systemically erase the culture and history of the Indigenous peoples. And it wasn't that long. I think it was the mid-90s whenever we find the last one was closed down. So it's not that old news, as you might think. All right, what else is happening? Well, Singapore. Singapore usually has mellow news or cool, like, fun stories. But a Singaporean tortured and killed Singaporean who tortured and killed Myanmar maid gets 30 years in jail. A Singaporean woman found guilty of starving, torturing, and killing her domestic worker from Myanmar has been sentenced to 30 years in prison. Piang Nya Don reportedly weighed only 24 kilograms, that's 53 pounds, when she died from her injuries in 2016. Prosecutors have called the actions of Gayatri Murugayan, the wife of a policeman, evil and utterly inhumane. It's among a series of high-profile maid abuse cases in the wealthy city-state in recent years. Miss Murugayan, 40, had pleaded guilty to a number of charges, including culpable homicide against Miss Piang. The judge said the prosecution had painted a shocking picture of how the 24-year-old one was tortured, humiliated, starved, and ultimately killed. He said the case was one of the worst cases of culpable homicide in the city-state, and that words could not accurately describe the level of abuse the young woman had to endure the month before her death. During the trial, the court heard that Miss Murugayan began abusing the young woman from October 2015, shortly after Miss Piang had arrived in Singapore. CCTV footage from cameras installed in the house showed the abuse she suffered in the last month of her life, often being assaulted several times a day. Miss Mary Guyon also reportedly burned her with a heated clothes iron and was accused of throwing her around like a rag doll. The court heard that Miss Piang's meals often consisted of sliced bread, soaked in water, cold food from the fridge, or some rice. She lost 15 kilograms, about 38% of her weight, in 14 months. The 24-year-old helper died in July 2016 after she was repeatedly assaulted over several hours by Miss Murugayan and her mother. An autopsy report later found Miss Piang died from oxygen deprivation to her brain after being repeatedly choked. Miss Murugayan's lawyers had sought a sentence of 8 or 9 years, arguing that the defendant had been suffering from depression and obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. Her husband, who has been suspended from his job as a police officer, and her mother faced several charges linked to the case. Singapore is home to about 250,000 foreign domestic workers, typically from countries like Indonesia, Myanmar, or the Philippines. So, anyway, I thought it was important to give the whole story on that one, because it's very sad, and it's one of those hidden things that you don't see out on the street. Alright, Pakistan police, cleric confessed to sexually assaulting student. A religious cleric accused of sexually assaulting a student at a religious school in Pakistan's second largest city of Lahore has been arrested and has confessed to his crimes, police say, after widespread public outcry following the allegations. Aziz Ur Rahman, who was arrested from the northwestern town of Minawali on Saturday, had earlier denied the allegations in a video released on social media. "We've been able to arrest this criminal. We will take it as a test case, interrogate him, conduct scientific professional investigation, prosecute, and get him convicted by the court," said Inam Ghani, the provincial police chief in Punjab province, of which Lahore is the capital. "We want our kids protected from these child molesters and keep our society safe for our future." On June 17th, police registered a criminal complaint against the cleric after the student came forward to accuse him, following the release of a graphic video that showed Raymond engaging in sexual intercourse with the student. The case was registered under a section of Pakistani law dealing with carnal intercourse against the order of nature with any man, woman, or animal, as well as for criminal intimidation. Just trying to skip over the worst parts of it. Sexual abuse against children is a widespread problem in the South Asian country, with more than 2,960 cases of abuse against children registered in 2020, according to rights group Sahil. That's S-A-H-I-L. Of those cases, more than 62% cases involved a form of sexual abuse, including sexual assault and forced filming for the purposes of pornography. So anyway, sorry if I didn't give a warning there. I didn't realize it was going to be as graphic as it was.
get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
I know, right? I know. Heavy news today. You know what? How about this? Let's do a light story before we play a song. Australian mouse plague. Let's talk about the mouse plague. A mouse plague in New South Wales, Australia, has forced a jail to relocate thousands of inmates while it carries out cleaning and renovations. More than 400 prisoners and 200 staff at the Wellington Correctional Center will be moved to other facilities over the next 2 weeks. The mice have caused extensive damage to prison infrastructure, including internal wiring and ceiling panels. New South Wales is suffering from the worst mouse plague in decades. A bumper grain harvest has boosted the number of rodents in the southeastern state, where they have been wreaking havoc for months, especially at farms. The state prison authority said operations at the jail would be reduced for about 4 months while it was cleaned, repaired, and protected against future plagues. Mice had invaded the center and damaged to such an extent that we're much better off evacuating the center for a period of time, said Peter Severin, Commissioner of the Corrected Services, NSW, because they're in New South Wales. The mice start decaying. Oh, most staff will be redeployed, while inmates will be transferred to a number of sites. The mice start decaying, and then the next problem is mites, and we just don't want to expose staff and prisoners to anything that could cause harm to their health. He said the infestation had intensified in recent weeks as the mouse plague worsened across the state. So, man, how wild is that, right? Anyway, we're going to go ahead here. I've got a Tom Petty song for you. I often think about this. Anytime I go to see live music or I go, one of the reasons that I really don't like seeing big name bands or big name acts anymore is because after I heard this song, when it came out a long time ago now, but when this song came out, it really got me to look into the performer's eyes and kind of see, and yeah, I'm just always surprised. A lot of the performers I've been really excited to go see, when you watch them, they're kind of, anyway, listen to the song, you'll get what I'm putting down.
So much, and he won't play what they say to play, and he don't wanna change what don't need to change. And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. Yeah. Well, some folks say they're gonna hang him so high, 'cause you just can't do what he did. There's some things you just can't put in the minds of those kids. As we celebrate mediocrity, all the boys upstairs wanna see how much you'll pay for what you used to get for free. There goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. And there goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. Sometimes it'll kinda come in, and I'll bust a move and remember how it was back then. And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. There goes.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Oh man, I really like that song, but it wasn't the it wasn't wholly the song I wanted to play. But you know, such is life. That kind of is what happens. I will track down the proper song title. I'll just probably listen to this whole record. The record's title is The Last DJ, and so that's probably why I don't remember which track it was. But anyway, there's a song about it, and it really rubs me. Anyway, let's keep on a rolling. So we did the Mouse Plague. So what else is going on? Well, this is kind of sweet. A man with Alzheimer's proposed to his wife after forgetting they were married. A married couple from Connecticut, that's in the United States, hosted a second wedding ceremony when the groom, who has a type of dementia, proposed to his wife again after forgetting they were already married. Despite struggling to remember his marriage due to early onset Alzheimer's disease, Peter Marshall, age 56, has never forgotten the love he has for Lisa, 54, his wife of 12 years, whom he has recently most regarded as his favorite caregiver during his deteriorating memory. It's been devastating, but I've done my best to stay positive and focus on one day at a time, Lisa Marshall told the Washington Post. My mantra has always been to have no regrets. While watching a wedding scene on TV last year, Peter asked Lisa to marry him, not remembering the wedding proposal the next day and forgetting that he and Lisa were already married. I said, "Do what?" And he pointed to the TV, to the scene of this wedding, and I said, "Do you want to get married?" He said yes, and had this huge grin on his face. "He doesn't know that I'm his wife. I'm just his favorite person." Lisa decided to renew the couple's vows with the help of her daughter, Sarah Brandt, who has a wedding planning business. Sarah encouraged her mother to do it, offering to organize the entire ceremony. "I knew that my stepdad, who I'm very close with, was there through some of the toughest times of my life. He means so much to me and my mom as his best friend, so I was proud to be able to take on an important role." This is just a really... It's always sad. Alzheimer's is one of those scary diseases. We won't delve into that, because even though it's news to me and we often joke about being sad, we'll try not to be too sad today. The WHO is going to establish... We'll go ahead and get going into some world news. It's a little less dire, maybe. South Africa is going to host the continent's first COVID-19 vaccination production facility, as President Cyril Ramaphosa said Monday. Africa now understood that doses would never come from elsewhere in time to save lives. Ramaphosa joined the World Health Organization and French President Emmanuel Macron in announcing the new hub for messenger RNA coronavirus vaccine technology. But as the project will take time to get off the ground, no vaccines are expected from it until next year. At tech transfer hubs, the technology is established at industrial scale, while interested manufacturers can receive training and any necessary licenses to the technology. The ability to manufacture vaccines, medicines, and other health-related commodities will help to put Africa on a path to self-determination. "It's been shown now that we just cannot continue to rely on vaccines that are made outside of Africa, because they never come, they never arrive on time, and people continue to die," Ramaphosa told a WHO virtual press conference via video link. Very serious words. It's great that they're going to do this. During a visit to South Africa last month, Macron said he was pushing for the faster transfer of technology to allow poorer countries to start manufacturing their own COVID-19 jabs. "It's a great day for Africa," said Macron. "Each continent must be able to develop and produce its own vaccines, its own medicines. Action for global public goods is the fight that this century must uphold and fight that cannot wait." So, we'll see how this plays out. It seems like a good deal. They'll be able to make an impact in COVID-19 if they're not starting output until next year. Let's go over to Cuba. It's always hard to get neutral news about Cuba because it's so polarizing. We'll just keep a general short headline. Cuba has said on Monday its three-shot Abdala vaccine against the coronavirus has proven to be 92.28% effective in last-stage clinical trials. The announcement came just days after the government said another homegrown vaccine, Soberana 2, has approved 62% effective. That's great news. Hopefully, they can. Cuba does a lot, does as much good as it can in the world. So, hopefully, those ease suffering in the world. Oh man, hold on, hold on. This is pretty cool. Owl news. This is an owl update. Owl news. This is an owl update. If you follow the Dubious Goals Committee, you know that there's some serious owl business going on. But check this out. When it comes to bird species, one can honestly say they're hard to keep up with. More so if the last time a certain species was spotted was over a century ago. But that's what makes discovering them such a thrilling thing in the first place, and perhaps one of the best places to go looking for unique feathered friends is in the lush, mountainous rainforest of Borneo, twice the age of the Amazon at 130 million years old. Well, a recent study published in April 2021 reveals the rediscovery of the Borneo Raja Scops owl, last seen in the wild in 1892. In the study published in the Wilson Journal of Ornithology, Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center ecologist Andy Boyce reports evidence of the existence of the Borneo subspecies, known scientifically as Otis brookie in the rainforest of Sabah, Malaysia, more specifically near Mount Kinabalu. Back in 2009, Boyce joined a team of researchers on a decade-long project that involved observing birds and searching for nests around the Kinabalu Park in Sabah. While into the long-term project, the avian ecologist chanced upon the Raja Scops owl in May 2016 after a team member had alerted him to a peculiar-looking bird, a species that looked completely different to the rest of the birds they had spotted at the time. Lo and behold, the bird that was last seen over a century ago. It was a pretty rapid progression of emotions when I first saw the owl. Shock and excitement that we'd found this mystical bird. The pure anxiety that I had to document as fast as I could. After carefully observing the bird from a safe distance so as to not disturb it, Boyce deduced that the Raja Scops owl was indeed its own unique species and needed further studying. Based on size, eye color, and habitat, I knew it was the Bornean Raja Scops owl, he said. What's more, taking into account the bird's specific plumage characteristics, known speciation patterns within the Otis genus, and the phylogeographic patterns of montane birds in Borneo and Sumatra, O.B. brookie is likely its own unique species, and further study is needed. Otis brookie solokinsis. It looks pretty cool. They have a really big, if you think of an owl's face, they've got really big eyebrows. They're not really eyebrows, they're feathers off around their eyes, but anyway. In terms of size, the owl's a small creature weighing only 100 grams, which is about the weight of 4 AA batteries. One might think that because of its elusive nature and lack of studies about the species, the bird would be prioritized in some sort of wildlife conservation scheme. However, according to its listing on the International Union for Conservation of Nature, it's a species of least concern. Doesn't really make sense, does it? Okay, a little commentary from our friends over at Mashable Southeast Asia. Okay, we talked about the vaccine center. Oh, we should talk about Bitcoin. Uh-oh. Yep, it's time to talk about Bitcoin.
That's correct.
Yep, hold on.
It's been time for tech news.
Yep, we're going to talk about Bitcoin real quick, just because it's a slow news day. Oh, and it's slow because I looked these up early in the day. There have been a few different shootings around the United States, which is kind of commonplace now. But if I recall right, one shooting happened in D.C. and it had a football player involved. And then one happened in Minnesota where there's a bunch of police riot. There's a lot of riots and protests going on right now because the cops keep killing black people. Or just other people in general, just kind of wantonly killing people. All right. Bitcoin tumbles below $30,000 on China crypto crackdown. Bitcoin has fallen below $30,000 for the first time in more than 5 months, hit by China's crackdown on the world's most popular cryptocurrency. We mentioned this a little while ago. Basically, China has said stop mining Bitcoin, similar to what happened in Iran. So the digital currency slipped to about 28,890. So 28,890, $28,000, and has lost about 50% of its value since reaching an all-time high of $64,000 in April. China has told banks and payment platforms to stop supporting digital currency transactions. It follows an order on Friday to stop Bitcoin mining in the Sichuan province. On Monday, China's central bank said it had recently summoned several major banks and payment companies to call on them to take tougher action over the trading of cryptocurrencies. Banks were told to not provide products or services such as trading, clearing, and settlement for cryptocurrency transactions. China's third largest lender by assets, the Agricultural Bank of China, said it was following the PBOC's, the People's Bank of China's, guidance and would conduct due diligence on clients to root out illegal activities involving cryptocurrency mining and transactions. China's Postal Savings Bank said it would not facilitate any cryptocurrency transactions. Chinese mobile and online payment platform Alipay, which is owned by financial technology giant Ant Group, said it would set up a monitoring system to detect illegal currency transactions. So the latest measure came after authorities in the southwest province of Sichuan on Friday ordered Bitcoin mining operations to close down. Authorities ordered the closure of 26 mines last week, according to a notice widely circulated on Chinese social media sites and confirmed by a former Bitcoin miner. Sichuan is a mountainous region in southwest China. I always hate whenever they do these fluffy pieces. Is home to many cryptocurrency mines, basically huge centers with racks upon racks upon racks of computer processors owing to the large number of hydroelectric power plants there. China accounted for around 65% of global Bitcoin production last year, with the Sichuan rating as its second largest producer, according to research by the University of Cambridge. So yeah, this was a big concern, because if a single entity controls over 51% of the hash rate in the network, they can do all sorts of, they can start doing all sorts of nefarious things. So that's why people care about hash rate and what countries are doing what. Bitcoin is forming a death cross, hinting at more pain to come. Its average price over the last 50 days has fallen below that of its 200-day moving average, a sign of impending losses. So get ready for a bumpy ride if you're holding Bitcoin. Just a couple of quick stories here as we end out the day. I got one more tech story, and that's just to mention that if you're using an RSA SSH key, it's time to upgrade. If you're using those RSA keys, it's time to switch over or start using a different encryption algorithm. So RSA is, if you have a 3072 or 4096 bit length, then you're pretty good. The 1024 bit length isn't even considered safe, and these are the really long RSA keys that you see. ECDSA, the elliptic curve stuff, it depends on how well your computer can generate a random number when you create that signature. And then there's questions about whether or not the NIST curves are safe. But ED25519, that's Echo Delta 25519, was introduced on OpenSSH version 6.5, and it's the ED-DSA implementation using the Twisted Edwards curve. It's using elliptical curve cryptography that offers better security with faster performance. And what's nice is the key is pretty small. It's not super big. So definitely look that up. OpenSSH, it's not too hard to go ahead and generate one of those keys. And away you go. We're out of time. The only other thing to mention was that the Czech police killed a Romani man.
Well, that sound means that our time is coming to a
traffic stop.
Thanks for listening.
I'll be back
tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Sorry, I played the wrong song and then didn't get that last story out. Enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee.